Up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM here in... that's Santa Cruz, in spite of the cough. A special edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Normally you'll be hearing John Stewart's show. John is hors de combat, as we say. He's not feeling well, so he asked me to sit in for him, and I'm doing that. So you're going to be listening to a special two-hour edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We're going to focus on questions like the drumming decision of last night at City Council. We're going to carry on some interviews from earlier this month with Stanford, where there was a large meeting of homeless activists there. We had some very interesting stuff, which is going to touch on the Atlanta conference this summer. Food Not Bombs is going to have an international conference at the same city where there's going to be the Olympics. And already there's a massive crackdown in Atlanta against the homeless. We're going to be playing some tape on that. We have an interview with Becky Johnson on yesterday's council meeting on the question of large grants of money for hungry poverty pimps, or in this case, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's Community House Project. We're going to have, well, that and more. We may even have a guest in our studio. He was supposed to meet me, and I haven't yet been able to find him, but who knows, maybe he will show up. In the meantime, just stay with us. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the midweek edition, and here's a bit from Inner City.
Good! Yeah. And they're free!
Good.
And they're often! I intend to fly higher!
Higher!
Higher! Higher!
Higher!
Higher! Higher! Higher! Higher! Higher! Melt down all the tin cans, broken bottles, and crap into a golden medallion! Cycling and swinging! Just wagging my way!
Amen.
Here falls a sea, were one sea.
One sea.
What a great sea that would be if all the slums were one slum.
One slum.
What a great slum that would be. And if all the outcasts were one act, what a great act that would be. And if that great man turns our great ass and cut down the great slum and let it fall into the great sea, oh yeah, what a great if, what a great if, what a great if.
Everything down and up above. Here is what it's all about. Nothing and nobody can judge me.
here? Do we have... Yes, we do. Good. Inner City, an early musical which I frequently assail your ears with. Great musical. In the studio, we have a special roving guest who I caught sabotaging the transmitter as I came in. That's Matt from... I guess you're from the Bay Area these days.
I'm up in the Bay Area pretty frequently. We've had stuff going on up in Free Radio Berkeley. All kinds of new information up there.
Whoa. So what's the update from Free Radio? What's this I hear about your driving original voices off the air?
Oh, yeah. We enjoy doing that. No, for those who haven't heard the update on what's up with the Free Radio issue, basically, we've gone to court because the FCC can't stand the idea of independent radio like you're hearing at this very moment. And we went to court, and Judge Claudia Wilkin decided that maybe we weren't so dangerous after all and let us continue to broadcast. And we went to court again because the FCC still couldn't deal with it. And there was a delay and a delay and delay because the FCC knew that they were not doing real well in their court case, that we had the upper hand, really. And as it stood last time, the FCC tried to ask that basically that we should lose, that Free Radio Berkeley should lose, and immediately the FCC should win, and we should be prevented from being able to broadcast at all. And once again, the judge didn't feel that that was really such a good idea. And so, sometime in the coming year, who knows with how long things take in court, we'll finally go to an actual, big political free speech argument kind of trial where the defense with Stephen Dunifer of Free Radio Berkeley and a whole bunch of hot lawyers will be calling all kinds of fun people to the stand, like Ben Bagdikian and other like
renowned author.
Big name sort of media and free speech experts who will just rip the FCC to shreds. We're actually looking forward to it. It should be really fun.
So there actually was a decision from Claudia Wilkins in the last month on this issue?
Well, her decision was to deny the FCC's request for summary judgment. Summary judgment is legally, it means the facts in this case are not disputed, because we don't dispute that we are broadcasting what they can deem to be illegally. Mm-hmm. We don't dispute that that's going on and that they have rules against it. And so they were trying to say, well, there it is. It's done. Give us judgment.
And they also claimed that the court did not have proper jurisdiction over the kinds of regulations they were discussing, and they had a number of other technical issues they were raising. But I hadn't heard that what was the day that Claudia came out with her decision?
That's actually been a while. This is 5-6 weeks ago, probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, news travels slowly. I thought we were all still hanging on what her decision was going to be, but actually it's going to be a trial way down the road.
Yeah, we'll get a trial. Now, obviously, So it's still in question. Ultimately, it could be ruled against us, but so far it's gone well every time.
And not at least for the next few months, we're all pretty much secure.
Oh, yeah, there's no fear for, I would guess, at least a year or more. I mean, think about how long these trials take. This one's not even going to start for quite a while.
It should be interesting to follow, and I understand we also have a large meeting coming up next month in June for all the free radio stations in... Aha, we have two mics. Well, we don't have...
Is that on?
I'm not sure. We're fine with these mics here. Is it plugged in?
Well, gosh, maybe it went away.
Now it's...
We're trying to get multiple mics here. Good. We'll just put this one in the center. And
so it's
we'll
Matt and Robert, and maybe a couple mics will be coming in later. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was a big one back in the early 80s, late 90s, when we had a lot of... Never mind. I'm a little slow this morning. So what about the big meeting for the free radio that's happening in the middle of this month? I understand there's going to be not just a statewide meeting, but a national free radio meeting in the area. Have you heard about that?
You know what? No one's filled me in on that.
Oh, boy.
I was lucky enough to make it to the last one over in San Jose.
Before one of the guys got killed who showed up at that meeting.
Well, yeah. Yeah, back before people were being murdered for starting free radios, we had a nice big meeting that was... really productive, and it was good to see people from all over the state, and in fact, further out as well.
I've got this, I don't know if you have any more details on it, but I just got the latest Food Not Bombs menu. The story has here that radioactivist Michael Taylor, kidnapped and executed in L.A. on April 23rd, 1996, Michael Taylor, age 45, was taken from his house by two acquaintances. Police claim that they found Michael's body near a railroad track, shot through the back of his head with his hands tied behind his back. According to police, residents called in a report of gunfire near the tracks. Michael's friends report that the police indicated by their line of questioning that they thought the execution was politically motivated. Michael was in the process of setting up a micro radio station that was to be called Los Angeles Liberation Radio. The group Refuse and Resist had chosen Michael to be recipient of their Courageous Resister Award for starting the station, but because of his murder, he could not attend the event in New York. Over 150 people were in attendance at his memorial. Michael is survived by his mother, Alma Taylor, of Tulsa, Oklahoma. San Francisco Liberation Radio reported that when they asked LAPD homicide detective Steve Watson if the execution could have been politically motivated, he responded by saying, "I would have to say that that would be highly, highly unlikely." The LAPD did not report on Michael's death until a week had passed. KPFA and KQED Radio in San Francisco both reported on his death for the first time on April 30th when police released the first information about the innocent. Detective Watson declined to name any suspects, according to the San Francisco Liberation Radio report. The other activists who were working with Michael Taylor on starting LA Liberation Radio have put the project on hold because of his death. His many friends are shocked and saddened. Michael Taylor was an African-American activist who volunteered with the homeless in Pacifica Radio KPFK. He reported extensively on Mumia Abu-Jamal and even traveled to Philadelphia for Mumia's hearing. Michael also interviewed people involved with the gang truths, homeless programs, and police repression. His program on community issues was taken off the air as part of Pacifica's attempt, that's KPFA, KPFK, folks, to become more mainstream. After he was removed from KPFK, Michael led the effort to start Los Angeles Liberation Radio, actually similar to what happened in Berkeley. I remember broadcasting on the sidewalk outside of KPFA in 1993 as Free Radio Berkeley started. He was interviewed by Keith McHenry on San Francisco Liberation Radio a week before his death. Segments of the interview are included in this May's Food Not Bombs Radio Network program, which reports on Michael's life and the controversy around his death. This is a story in this month's Food Not Bombs menu. Anything to add to that, Matt?
No, that's honestly more details than I'd been able to get, although I think if we look at this historically, this goes right along the line of what... what the FBI has been doing for decades. We've seen the same kind of politically motivated persecution and even assassinations when activists truly become most effective. When the government comes to a point where they're really scared that somebody's doing something really well and they've been unable to frame them up on charges or to somehow make it look like, like they're snitching out their friends, they just kill them.
Well, I guess I'm not sure if that shows that I'm fucking up still too much big time to be considered for this honor, or possibly not, because I have this case coming up on June 7th where I'll be going into court in San Francisco to face Judge Barkley. I've kind of gone on about this on the air, and I will continue to go on about it because I think it's an important case, not just because my butt is on the line, which it is, of course. I face 2 months in jail for contempt of court, specifically serving free food in violation of a court order. The only person ever tried under this order in terms of a misdemeanor trial, there was previously a trial of Keith McHenry where he was found innocent because the order was found defective. The order states you have to get Food Not Bombs, you get all appropriate permits, and the permit process was removed in 1990, so it's a little difficult to get a real permit when you have an imaginary permit process. But I suppose if you're really creative about it, you could do something with that. I wasn't able to, and I got arrested for serving rice and bagels, served a night in jail, and then had to go through endless court appearances, a long trial, and have appealed this case all the way up to the California Supreme Court. And finally, it's gone back to Judge Barkley's court, who this month, 2 weeks ago, on the 16th, ruled that he would come to a final decision, and he indicated I should be ready to head for the big house if his decision came down against me, on June 7th, and that'll be at 1 o'clock in Department 14 at the Hall of Justice in San Francisco. So they're certainly taking a roundabout way of taking me out. Perhaps a bullet or some bad food would be better. I don't suggest that, by the way. I prefer the long approach rather than the short approach. And hey, I'm glad that we're continuing here in Santa Cruz, which reportedly led the way in the number of complaints against a free radio station. We've had a rocky history, although a lot of those complaints, almost all of them, as far as I know, have been resolved informally in terms of problems with transmitting and getting us on the right band. And, we are a fledgling station, and, we do make mistakes, and we try to correct them. But the basic issue that you raise, Matt, and that, of course, the FCC is trying to deny, is the importance of the community and those in the community without the huge resources of large corporations having the power to speak and share and use the airwaves to further the human cause, to further the everyday sharing that needs to happen, the everyday communication we need to have with each other in order to proceed as a society and to best benefit each of us as individuals.
Yeah, agreed. I think, well, community radio, we used to have community radio, sort of. I mean, KUSP around here was a pretty decent station, but these days, how often do you hear real community affairs? How often do you hear local news? How often do you hear somebody right in your community telling you what's up? Or how often do you hear NPR? I mean, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars does your local community radio station pay to get the national corporate news out of NPR? Wasting their money when you can listen here. Now, do you always hear what you like on this station? I sure hope not. I hope you absolutely hate what you hear on this station, I don't know, half the time? That should be the idea. There should be a diversity of voices here, all from the community, from different points of view and different things going on, that pushes your buttons. I sure hope so. That's what we're about.
Well, hey, now that brings up an issue that we originally started with, and
oh,
I intend to drag you across the mat on, Matt.
Oh, please do.
Now, you talk about diversity here, and indeed we've had this kind of controversy down here in Santa Cruz. the barring of so-called hate speech from the radio. Now, for example, in radio, I've spoken against this in radio meetings and often been a lonely voice, or at least one of the few to speak up. I think, you know, people can speak for themselves, and if people don't like people's shows, they can call in and talk about them and so forth. I've actually had a Nazi on my show, or a man with Nazi views. He was a homeless guy who was also turned out to be something of a, a Holocaust revisionist at some point. And, you know, that wasn't really the main focus, but, it got a lot of flack. Everybody called in and said, you scumbag, and so forth, or we don't like that view, and that's fine. I'm glad it was discussed. There were some people that wanted to have those views barred from the air to start with because they didn't think they were appropriate in any public forum whatsoever, at least not in our public forum. I want to ask you about that issue in Berkeley, and then I want to ask you about this recent controversy I've heard about sexist behavior and speech being barred from the air, or I didn't catch the full notion of what it was, but there have been individuals who have been kicked off the air for the content of what they've done.
Certainly, yeah. In fact, there has. Now, I should stress that this is sort of specific to Free Radio Berkeley, and that each free radio that is created and set up by the people in their local community can set themselves up and define themselves in any way they see fit. If they decide that what they really want is a radio that is open to absolutely, totally anyone, and you come on and do any show you want to, and this is just this place where people come and do it, well, that's fine. That's one way to do it. Free Radio Berkeley has set itself up as a collective, and we put forward a mission statement of sort of our long-reaching vision of society, and it may be, no, thank you, it may be idealistic, but nevertheless, it's, our vision of what we'd like to see. And basically what it says is that we, the programmers of Free Radio Berkeley, have a vision of a society free of racism, sexism, homophobia, and all other forms of oppression, and that in attempting to with that goal in mind, our programming will reflect this. Now, that doesn't mean that, I mean, that leaves a lot of room open, but basically what it says is that we as a collective have the right to define who we are, and that we don't really have a place for Nazis on the air. We happen to not really have a place for sexists on the air either. We feel that you can get that anytime you want on so many other stations, other radio stations. Turn on one of the major morning jocks, and they're all sexist pieces of crap. They do it all the time, and they get paid big bucks for it. So if that's what you want, go ahead. There's no shortage of it. We strive to be something different. And so when we've had a couple issues in Berkeley, instances where DJs were just offensively sexist. This isn't, something subtle. It was really bad. And
the dirty details here.
Well, there was one guy whose name I'll leave out, but Now, that was just before I became involved with that station up there. And just over and over and over again, his whole theme, again, was just bitch and hoe. And, I mean, it's not just using the words, but it's how they're used and who they're directed at. And he just wouldn't get off it. And finally, you know, the other members of the collective said, look, this isn't where we're at. And we don't have a place for you in our collective, and you got to go. Now, it doesn't mean he can't be on the radio. There's lots of radios around. And in fact, radio is fairly inexpensive. It's not free, but people can put them together and do them themselves. In fact, if you're out there listening, you can do it yourself.
How can they do that, Matt?
Well, I'll get that information for them in a few minutes. I have it nearby. But part of it is that if he still wants to be on the radio, he can make it happen. And in fact, we said, look, if you want to even start your own station, we'll give you the technical support so you can get up and do it. But we don't want you to be part of our radio anymore. Because it is easier for people to get on different free radios and even start their own if they want, it's less an issue of censorship than an issue of the collective right there defining itself and who they want to be. So he was asked to leave. And then recently it's sort of come up again, and the whole issue was sparked again, and some people were saying, no, it's free speech and they should be able to say whatever they want to. And, well, basically those people were overruled.
But they themselves were not asked to leave for supporting the Southern Division.
No, of course not. It was a comedy troupe who was getting on, and...
Not the Jolly Roger comedy troupe.
Not the Jolly Roger comedy troupe. They are happily.
Back to the Mac.
Well, yes, yes.
And now, I like them too. By the way.
Yeah, they
also
are
a lot of fun.
Pretty damn cool. And in fact, there's this rumor that it might have been one of the members of that comedy troupe that had a problem with this other comedy troupe.
Rumor.
Yeah,
get him.
A nasty rumor. Well, basically, these guys were getting on and. Besides the part where I personally felt that their humor wasn't really funny, but that's not the point. I mean, we're not going to throw them off because they're not funny.
Well, Matt, what I'd heard...
No, go for it, please.
The question was, also, we have DJs doing this, although I'm not that closely affiliated with the meeting process in Free Radio Santa Cruz because I hate meetings, and I never go to them if I can avoid it, unless I'm running them, of course. And then, of course, everybody hates my meetings, so it's pretty bad. But... meetings of Free Radio Santa Cruz have had this in case of a DJ who would call up people and put them on the air without their knowledge. And some of the times it was very funny, and it apparently worked very well. And other times he would embarrass women around sexual issues, I guess. Although there's a thin line. Some of these things are taboo subjects which are amusing to hear on the air but aren't really... Well, some people would not call them sexist, even though they're sexually related. So there's some issues of content here. I understand you had a similar thing happening up there.
We did have a similar thing going on. And again, I stress that each radio, if the radios form collectives or no collective at all, it's their right to run it as they wish. For myself, and I think I ultimately speak for at least a number of the members of Free Radio Berkeley, is that, yeah, these guys that we had on were doing something similar. The sexist jokes were one thing. The people they were making fun of repeatedly, was one of the problems, but they were also calling up places like Good Vibrations, which is one of the few places in Berkeley, and there's one in San Francisco where you can go and get vibrators and dildos.
Really
and
good vibrator.
Yeah, a damn well-built one that'll last for a long time.
Right.
It's a really cool shop, and it's all women.
Check that out.
All women run and owned, and there's a lot of incredible information there, and it's a type of environment that you don't often find. And they were calling them up at like 8 in the morning, and the women who were working there, of course, have to answer the phone and ask, not telling them that they were on the air, and asking them really... I mean, it's one thing...
A black, velvet, spiked dildo sort of thing?
Well, no, it was more than that. It was describing in-depth sexual acts. Not because there was any relevant reason to do it, but just to be offensive, just to try to get, you know,
get the reaction.
For you know, women who have to do this, it's not their choice. They're at work. They can't just tell the person to fuck off and hang up like they would at home. And so, they were doing this repeatedly. They were doing this over and over again, harassing these same people. And we got to the point that said, you know, that's just way over the line. You're harassing you know, hardworking, well-meaning people who we think are doing an incredible job, and you're giving them shit. And besides the fact that of the sexism and other things going on, we hate to really make this an issue, but I think that's like, you know, at least a serious misdemeanor, if not a felony. Now, I'm not usually one to really care about the law, but this does get us into even more trouble still. We're already dealing with court things over and over. Damn right. At least do it to subvert the dominant paradigm, not to reinforce it.
Well, let me ask you this. It would seem to me that I understand you then had some problems. Maybe did you attend any of the collective meetings around these issues? Sounds like you did.
Well, I got as much information as I could. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be there for some of the biggest, longest, most heated ones. I'm sort of mixed on whether I'm happy I was not there or disappointed.
Did you talk to Cornerstone Carol Denny about any of this?
I talked to Carol and a number of other people were there because I wanted to get different points of view on it. And I talked to the guys who ultimately were asked to leave the station. I had about a 90-minute talk while I was on the air one night with one of the guys. And I tried to just carefully ask him what was his experience and why he felt these things were going on. And after talking to him for a long time, and I tried to just, you know, I just wanted to get his opinion side of things and see where he's coming from, I really came to the conclusion, not that he had any interest in stopping being sexist or changing, I really came to the conclusion that he still didn't even understand what sexism was. And I tried in every way I could to explain it. Now, just because I explain it to someone doesn't mean they're going to go, oh, well, now I see. But I really felt like he never got it. There was some sort of barrier inside of him that...
Did he defend his position in any effective or significant way that you found worth the arguments worth noting?
While I felt that he didn't understand what sexism was, ultimately, he said, well, I don't think we're sexist. He didn't feel he was violating the mission statement that I mentioned before. And he just wasn't really willing to deal with it. He felt that he should just be able to come in, do whatever he wanted, and that we should all just fuck off and have nothing to say about
it. 90 minutes? Was there any?
I didn't put him on the air, actually. I'd heard enough of his bullshit to, you know, I talked with him. He just wanted to talk with me. He never asked to be on the air anyway. But I wanted to get his side as well before I made, you know, any sort of judgment for myself. But in my opinion, he
was a macho pig.
Right. And then let's top this all off, and this may have been the final sort of cutting factor that really got the rest of the collective to want to get rid of them, is once this all started coming up, they started threatening people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This one guy known as Captain 40 Ounce was threatening to, quote, beat the shit out of people, and
really?
They were threatening they were going to come down to the station and fuck things up, and so, like, the place where the radio is, the people who are right around there were...
apprehensive?
Yeah, they were paranoid that people who have repeatedly been, you know, drinking, getting drunk in the station and sort of being a problem a little bit already, were going to come down there all fucked up and start problems at 3 or 4 in the morning. And, you know, you can see...
repeated threats or just like one threat that was mentioned repeatedly by critics? The reason I say this is we had similar kinds of problems.
Wouldn't say it was long and ongoing, but it was more than once.
Okay.
There were several different members of the collective who were directly threatened on more than one occasion with threats of violence. Now, none of those ever materialized.
Right.
They seemed to be threats and nothing more. But nevertheless, it's just one more piece of the pie that just says, look, we don't want to have anything to do with you.
Hey, man, you know, you got to be a real man. Well, well, then here, as we follow this whole thing, I guess what interested me was that there were supporters of these people in spite of the fact that there was, you know, the, shall we say, questionable legal stuff, the embarrassing people without great educational concern or significant humor content along the lines that most of the collective wanted. There was all this concern, but there were those who said, hey, they should still be allowed to broadcast. And yet, here in Santa Cruz, we have a consensus process. Which means one person, as you know, can say, sorry, they stay on the air. I mean, if they're on the air, presumably the change in the policy would mean that you have to have unanimous... Wolfgang Bach so significant that indeed and we heard about this down here, that we heard that Carol Denny, the mystery woman, who wasn't really a mystery because she was mentioned here on our radio show about this issue, she had planned to do some sort of blockade of the station or major protest, which would be a direct action to make sure that the offensive programmers took their programming, let's say, down the road.
Oh, yeah. She was very prepared to do so. In fact, she showed up, and I was right there with her because they had the show right after mine, so she came during my show. And we had a good old time and hung out for a few hours. And, of course, the fearful people in question never did quite show up. So we basically just ended up...
What were you prepared to do? I'm kind of curious. And what had you guys on your agenda?
Well, I was just there sort of like doing my show, just an innocent bystander.
Yes, yes.
No. I supported her ideas. I mean, I felt that she felt that the process, that the meeting process was really going nowhere.
Was that because this consensus process was being used?
Well, I have to admit, and I'm not really much in favor of this, but Free Radio Berkeley, although a collective, does not use a consensus process.
No,
they voted on it. Well, the vote was 10 to 10.
Oh, really?
So they got absolutely nowhere. Now, it should be noted, although we can't say this absolutely says anything, but all the people who were arguing for free speech and, oh, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, sexist, this is, you know, they should be able to say whatever they want. We're all men.
Mm-hmm. All men.
Exclusively. And, you know,
with the exception of yours truly here.
Well, no, I wasn't there. No, I'm saying all the people that were making the argument of letting them stay on
right.
were men. There were also men who were saying, no, this is totally unacceptable.
Uh-huh.
But there were no women saying, well, you know, this is acceptable just because it's offensive. It, you know, it should go on. And
what
I was
about their girlfriend.
I don't know. But I was thinking, if this was a matter of racism, if this was someone coming on like the guest you were talking about on your show, coming on doing it, no one would be, people wouldn't be getting into this nearly as much. We wouldn't be going, oh, well, is this a free speech issue? We'd just be saying, no, this is not acceptable on this station. They can get their own station, they can go to their own place, but we're not going to have them on. And in fact, we dealt with some of these problems very, very early on with Free Radio Santa Cruz, like I remember. Exactly. But somehow, oh, it was only sexism, so it didn't matter. And I really feel like it shows to the degree in society to which sexism still is not only ever present among, you know, the general population, but among the activist community as well.
So half the collective said, keep these people on.
No. Half the people that showed up at the meeting.
Half the people at the meetings. Now, is this because
the important
meeting was packed with the supporters of the programmers who were in question, or?
Yes, at least partially. Now, first of all, the meetings don't certainly never get the number of people who are actually programmers at the station. And in fact, the first one where this issue came up, there were only, I think, 20 people or so. But a bunch of those people were friends of the programmers in question who were in the hot seat. And so the vote was 10 to 10. Now, lo and behold, 2 weeks later when the next meeting occurred and people had been informed on how the vote went and what the discussion was about and what was going on, many, many, many more people showed up. And that time the vote wasn't 10 to 10. I don't know the precise numbers, but overwhelmingly they were asked to leave. I'll also say that they'd been to another local free radio, and they lasted one night there before they were asked to leave by everyone else. They just said, oh, gosh, you left beer bottles all over the station, you pissed on our back porch, and we didn't like your show, and the combination of those three things just says, you can go somewhere else. So these guys are, you know, they're at two strikes already.
A roving gang of free-loving beer drinkers. So if you see them in your neighborhood, invite them into your local radio station. If you have a local radio station and you feel like
dealing with that.
Well, let's. I probably spent much too much time on this. For all you folks who don't know much about what's going on, a lot of this discussion has been for the benefit of regular listeners of this show who are interested in the doings of Free Radio Berkeley and Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're listening to the special midweek edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. That is to say, normally John Stewart's show. Madhouse Exit, perhaps. I'm not quite sure what he calls his show, and unfortunately we don't have a phone line at the moment. We are bereft of a phone line, so if anybody wants to castigate me for misusing John's 2 hours, you can give me a call at my phone number, which is 423-HUFF. Office short for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and it's 423-4833. And also, this goes to anything you want to say on the air. If you leave a message, I will play that message on the air. I could say that almost without qualification if it has any educational value whatsoever, and I may even do it if it's sexist, racist, or unintelligible. It has to be intelligible, I guess. Or at least artistic, and so it has to have some point. But you can give a call to 423-4833 for any kinds of reactions or things you might have said on this show through a phone line, but you can't. I also am like to kind of mine your find out from you what's been going up in Berkeley about other topics, such as People's Park, Proposition O, which, as we know, is the anti-panhandling, anti-sidewalk sitting ordinance, which has been on hold, I guess is still on hold, police practices toward the homeless in Berkeley, and any other lurid sex scandals you wish to discuss, in a non-sexist manner, of course.
Well, I honestly don't have a whole lot of updates on those other issues. The park is sort of on hold. I know that Food Not Bombs continues to serve basically without instance, without a problem from the city. East Bay Food Not Bombs is actually pretty tight with the city there, and things have been going fairly well, unlike in many other areas where the police and the city councils are hostile towards Food Not Bombs serving food to the hungry and the homeless. Berkeley has been an exception for all the different ways that the Berkeley City Council and police really suck and oppress all kinds of different people, particularly people who don't or can't afford to pay the theft known as rent. They have sort of decided to tolerate Food Not Bombs, which is kind of nice.
Well, Food Not Bombs is really such a major. It has a consensus of support, at least the idea of being able to share free food is so elementary and also so fundamental to basic religious doctrines, which a lot of right-wing people share. And we had a lot of right-wingers supporting us when we were sharing food back in 1989. And these are people who are otherwise very hostile to a lot of the issues that I supported. We had one guy who would sneak us food, who at the same time was, a virulent opponent publicly of mine, but I like him as a person in spite of his different political positions. And indeed, it can be said that these right-wingers, in some respects, are much more refreshing because they're candid about their views than the current occupants of the seats of our city council, who had a meeting last night, which I'm going to go into at greater length after this interview is over. I guess you also said you had an interesting piece from Consolidated's CD, Friendly Fascism, which you thought would go well with the theme of our show here.
Oh yeah, I think it goes right along. And, maybe we should just break on into that and take a little break here for a sec.
Sure.
Give the people a little musical interlude while we decide where we're going next.
The information he gets
as president every morning.
I relied heavily on advice from
the American Nazi Party.
And it changes.
I don't care what the facts are.
The Klansman
as president.
I don't care what the facts are.
Ever. The Klansman
as president.
I don't care what the facts are.
Ever.
As president every morning. I receive an intelligence briefing.
From the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan.
As president every morning. I receive an intelligence briefing.
From the American Nazi Party. The Klansman.
As president.
The Klansman.
As president.
I don't care what the facts are.
Ever.
I don't care what the facts are.
Ever.
I don't care what the facts are.
Ever.
And the world is moving too fast to forecast with absolute certainty.
And yet the morning news is often overtaken by the
American Nazi Party.
Now more than ever, you need
a real hood-wearing, cross-burning Klansman. The Klansman
ultimately affects you. We'll be right back.
century and the arrival of friendly fascism. Regrettably, millions will die as before. But just think of the tremendous selection in savings you'll gain. Of course, the loss of freedom and democracy are tragedies, I know. But consider the entertainment value contained within. And to remind you, it is you, the people, who have mandated this course of our fate. So please come with me.
That was Mobile Matt's selection here from Consolidated Friendly Fascism. A couple of announcements in the midst of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the show you are listening to here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. A forum on the death penalty and political prisoners in the U.S. featuring the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal is going to be hitting town on Saturday, June 1st. from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's free. You get to talk to all kinds, or at least listen to and maybe talk to all kinds of folks. Leonard Wineglass, who's the chief counsel for Mumia, currently in jail on death row in Pennsylvania. Ramona Africa, survivor of the infamous MOVE bombing of the early 80s. And David Anthony, professor of the History Board. Noel Hanrahan, writer of Equal Justice USA. Craig Hanley, UCSC professor of the Psychology Board. A bunch of other people I've never heard of, but who nonetheless are going to be discussing interesting topics that will be pursued in workshops up at Kresge Town Hall, UCSC, on June 1st, 10 to 5. Racism and imprisonment, women in prison, prisoners' rights, police brutality and corruption, and the prison industrial complex. And then on Monday, June 3rd, we will have a special debate with Mayor Rotkin, or Ratkin, as perhaps he calls himself now. He's been finding lots of rats around City Hall, so he's going to make sure that the First Amendment is suspended, at least until all these rats are cleared away. Of course, we have different definitions of who the rats are around City Hall. Are they the protesters, or are they the people that are keeping the lid on basic rights for homeless people and making sure that if they sleep outside, they are illegal after 11 o'clock at night with no legal places for people to be? Actually, later in the show, I'm going to play you a tape of my interview with Rotkin, which you heard briefly discussed in the last show, so you can get some idea of what is to be coming down the pike on Monday. Now, that Monday show is not going to be my show, where you're going to hear Rotkin debating me, and there are going to be four other people involved, four women involved, who will probably say a lot more that interests you if you've been following the show, if you're an old-timer, because you've heard me so many times, and you've even heard Rotkin on my show back in December, and of course quotes from Rotkin since then. But that'll be at 2 o'clock on Monday on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I believe the original recording will be on radio station KZSC at 10 o'clock. The campus station. I don't know the call numbers of KZSC, but I think it's at the extreme left end of the dial, ironically enough, since they're not that left, but they are, in fact, at that location on the dial. Working closer to events that are closer in time to where we are now, we have the Friday injunction hearing coming up. That's the hearing which will really tell the tale as to whether people who are protesting at City Hall will be driven off. That's what the City Council wants to do. They voted to do it 5-2, and the two who voted against it refused to sign declarations that actually simply repeated what they'd said publicly, that the demonstration was neat and orderly, that there was no rat or shitting problem per se that they had seen, that they had not been harassed by the protesters and the sidewalks had not been blocked. All these phony allegations have been made by the mayor, the gardener, and the Lieutenant Habey, the police force, no doubt will be made in other declarations. That'll be on the 31st, on Friday, in Department 8, Judge Stevens Court, at 8:30 in the morning. We need all the support we can on that, in that situation. And I'll be probably running a tape on my usual Bathrobe Spears Broadside show from 10 to 12 in the morning, which is when I usually do my show, Mondays and Fridays. Is there anything else happening? I think there probably is, but unfortunately it's not immediately present. What is present, however, is a mobile Matt here with a story from the Anderson Valley Advertiser. Is it a letter? I'm not sure, Matt. Tell me, what is this all about?
Oh, I've got a recent message from some of our friends in Berkeley. This is something I just felt the need to pass along because, well, I have a lot of respect for this guy, Richard Korn. He's a former professor of law and works on, well, you'll get the idea for yourself. This is an anticipatory history of the American police state. When the police state is finally established here, it may be inconvenient to write about. That's why we prefer to discuss it beforehand, before it becomes too controversial to do so. The American police state will not be brutal. People will not be swept up off the streets in unmarked cars or tortured in special rooms in private apartments. No mothers will congregate in Times Square carrying photographs of disappeared children. No concentration camps will disfigure the landscape. No telltale smoke will rise from tall stacks. No unspeakable thugs will perpetrate unmentionable acts. The business of the American police state will be conducted in the American way. Without fuss, without posturing, without Nuremberg rallies, clean-cut men and women will just be doing their job for their country. The job will be to prevent crime and disorder. before it happens. No more of this silly locking of doors after the Honda has been stolen. Troublemakers will be stopped before their troublemaking stirs folks up. Citizens who don't appreciate their country will be quietly deported, and our borders, for a change, will not be porous. Editors who disrespect decent public opinion will not be licensed to receive newsprint. The APS, the American police state, will be proactive, not reactive. Children who show signs of becoming delinquents and maybe serious criminals will be diagnosed and treated before they hurt themselves or others. Above all, the American police state will be participatory. Intelligence gathering will be a task for many. Citizens will not be wanting to dial a certain phone number in order to alert the right public protection officers. Thinking will become a public duty, privately rewarded, of course, in order to protect the source. Above all, respect for the flag, the Bible, and the family will be restored because it will be mandatory. No more of this permissive shit. The red-blooded American male will finally retake his country from the faggots, the feminists, and the atheists. Join up, brother and sister. Just fill out an application. The forms are everywhere.
The views you have heard do not represent the management of the station nor the broadcasters on the air. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're on the air with Bathrob Spears Broadsides and a man whom I insist on maligning as a mobile Matt, a Berkeley man who's been, well, probably a lot of other places too.
Rumors.
Rumors, just plain rumors, I guess. Well, let's do a little update on City Council and what happened last night. Matt, I guess this means that you're welcome to join me as sort of co-host. Is there anything more you wish to say regarding Berkeley or anything else before I launch into my tirade?
No, I've gotten most of my updates on the Berkeley and other things going on. One last piece. Activists who are interested in the forest and the environment who haven't already heard, the salvage rider is in effect, and Headwaters Forest will likely be being logged, not this summer, when activists would be most likely to get there and have the most effect, but they'll be waiting till September or November after school has begun again, and it's colder and difficult to travel, but you should be thinking about that. Lots of good things are coming up this summer. Everyone is welcome to go to Atlanta and for the Food Not Bombs International Convention, get together, and of course somewhat against the Olympics. There's the Democratic National Convention coming up in late August, and there will be a counter convention going on with lots of direct actions and other fun stuff. People from all over the country and elsewhere. You can relive 1968 here in the summer of 1996. How much fun it could be. So get on out and do that. If you're interested, go up to Idaho and help defend Cove Mallard and the forests up there, some of the last of the roadless areas that are being quickly destroyed for the production of roads and maybe another Kentucky Fried Chicken or something really important like that, because, you know, we don't really need those big stretches of forest. They could be so much more profitable as real estate. Thanks, y'all. This is Matt, and I am out of here.
Hey, thank you, Matt. Whoa, now there's a real talk show host for a change. Let's return, though, to our own little neck of the woods here. City Council, as I said, met in its second meeting of the month. Traditionally, every Tuesday, second and fourth Tuesday of the month, City Council meets here in Santa Cruz and ignores homeless issues, or shall we say directly slaps the homeless in the face with certain actions. I've mentioned them already on this hour. You're going to hear a brief interview soon with Becky Johnson, who was also at the City Council meeting and spoke about an appropriation for the Consortium of Care that came up. There was a victory at City Council of sorts, the drumming issue, which has been pounding the eardrums of all of us through the media and perhaps just on the general circuit, hit the City Council. And the City Council essentially decided to support voluntary guidelines, I guess, plus a small change in the noise ordinance, which supposedly will make it easier for police officers to deal with drummers directly who are refusing to respect the rights and the peace of the residents downtown, from whence came the original complaints on this issue. And we'll be covering that, I hope, in an interview with Tom Noddy pretty soon, which we recorded earlier this morning. Another thing that happened yesterday, on Tuesday, May 28th, was the arrival in town of the out-of-town agitating attorneys who are going to be out of their own pockets largely defending those homeless activists and their supporters at the City Hall sleepout, who will be showing up in court on Friday to fight the smear campaign by City Hall to remove this First Amendment protest through means of an injunction, that is to say a court order. Since they can't find a law, they're going to make one up to pull these people from the public view in front of City Hall at night. They say, well, it's okay if you parade around in the day, but we don't want you there at night, though it is, in fact, the issue being one of sleep and the city's criminalization of sleep at night, since it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock in Santa Cruz, outside or in a vehicle, which makes 1,000 people more or less illegal at night. That's the issue. That's the thing they're trying to bring to public attention. That's why they're lying out there in their sleeping bags under their thin blankets, getting $162 tickets and facing literally months in jail. I think they got their 200th ticket a few days ago. City Hall does not want that seen. City Hall doesn't like their being there. City Hall probably feels that if they eliminate the 24-hour aspect of it, they can probably eliminate the whole protest, because the power of the protest lies in its being a continuing protest. The idea that they can somehow sneak off to the bushes, sleep and hide illegally, and then come back and protest some more in the morning when it's legal, words fail me. You know, it's disgraceful that such a thing should even be proposed. It's sort of a joke that it should be proposed, and yet at the same time, it's very telling testimony to what the city council is saying. They are literally saying, get out and hide out. That used to be how I characterized Michael Rutkin's policy for people who sleep at night. You either hide out or you get out. Now they want you to both hide out and get out as far as protest goes. But we're hoping to stop that. And if you've been by the City Hall sleepout, have found that your sidewalks were not blocked, you could walk past them, that there wasn't a huge mess, that they did not abuse you and harass you or harass and abuse city officials, that you did not see piles of human waste and smell the stench of human urine, that you did not see large rats running around, allegedly drawn by the food that the protesters eat, and then fairly thoroughly clean up after themselves every morning, and actually not just every morning. Dan Hopkins is there with a push broom all the time. The guy is just, he's a mad janitor, what can you say? You should get in touch with attorney Kate Wells, whose phone number is 457-1545, and leave a statement with her that you're willing to sign for a declaration in court, because we're still gathering these declarations, even though the main declarations on which our legal arguments depend have already been filed with the court. They were yesterday, in a nick of time, right before 5 o'clock. We still have other declarations that we're hoping to get in. Those declarations, unfortunately, do not include those of Catherine Byers and Celia Scott, who I call Birdseed Byers and Silent Scott. Scott has been less silent recently. Actually, it wasn't Silent Scott I called her. It was Say Little Scott. She's been saying more, though, but she apparently hasn't been able to raise her voice to a level to simply sign a very brief statement saying that she has not seen the sidewalks blocked, she has not seen rats or human feces, and she has not been harassed by the protesters, all of which are true, and she would admit to verbally, I'm sure, at any point, but she refuses to say for the court. And since our attorneys don't want to make a big issue out of it, we're not subpoenaing these people, because the evidence that we do have, which includes up to 25, I think we have 25 or 26 declarations, is pretty overwhelming when contrasted with the three tissues of lies being presented by Lieutenant Habey, Michael Rotkin, and Gardener Richard Criswell. And no doubt there'll be more witnesses for the city as they attempt to show that the protest is a public health and safety hazard that constitutes a sufficient level of emergency that it should be dealt with by a court order, which is, again, a very serious thing. The court order that the city is seeking will bar protest during the evening hours at City Hall and anywhere downtown. People will not be able to sleep anywhere downtown under pain of an injunction. Under pain of, I should say, up to 6 months in jail with a trial before a jury, or up to 5 days in jail with a summary trial by a judge, and you can be arrested and put in jail immediately prior to trial. So you don't just get a sleeping ticket anymore if this injunction passes. You get dumped in the hooskow for essentially as long as they want, at least up to 6 months if they want to go for a jury trial on the very narrow issue of violating a court order. So the issue of sleeping won't be up for discussion. It'll just be, did you violate the court order? And as my normal listeners know that this is a difficult thing to fight in even before a jury. You would think that the jury would recognize they have the right to nullify, they have the right and that the duty to give justice to individuals who are being harassed with unfair prosecutions. But frequently juries are not aware of this, and they think that they have to kind of color in the spaces as delineated by the judges. And the judges are pretty much on the side of the establishment downtown. They're mostly DAs here in Santa Cruz, all except one. And that one tries to show he's even more DA-ish than the rest. That's Many Faces McAdams, or has in the past. I found when I fought a contempt of court order in San Francisco, as I mentioned earlier, that I was defeated. I was sentenced to 2 months in jail for serving free food, which seems to me an issue of even broader appeal to the public than the issue of the right to sleep for poor people at night. Although both of them seem pretty elementary to me. And talking about elementary issues and the rights of homeless people, here's an interesting story in yesterday's San Francisco Examiner, which I think got a very brief mention in the Sentinel, for those of you who read that publication. San Francisco Examiner on page A6 has a headline, "In San Rafael, it's homeless versus cops. Soup kitchen dilemma boils over. Advocates allege police harassment." San Rafael by Donna Horowitz. Rick Murphy, a carpenter who has fallen on hard times and lives in his car, was leaving the St. Vincent de Paul Society's dining room one day this past winter when he was cited for jaywalking. But what happened next galled him. The police asked to search his car. "It felt like they thought I had murdered someone," he said. For Murphy, 46, and others, the incident was another example of the harassment San Rafael's down-and-out say they suffer when they come to the dining hall for free meals. They contend that police, under pressure from downtown merchants, are going out of their way to hound homeless people out of town. What's going on is that police resources are being deployed on B Street right in front of St. Vincent de Paul's dining hall, said Richard Marcantonio, supervising attorney with Legal Aid of Marin. "Based on complaints by some merchants, there's just a wholesale attack on the homeless going on there," Marcantonio said. "When a well-heeled person crosses the street, that's no problem. But when a homeless person does, he's cited for jaywalking." The dining hall, a fixture for 15 years, serves hot meals to 250 to 300 poor and homeless people a day, and has long been a sore subject with many merchants. They say the homeless people abuse alcohol and drugs and are scaring away customers by urinating and vomiting in doorways and being loud and obnoxious. "I wouldn't walk down there with my 6-year-old, fumed San Rafael Vice Mayor Paul Cohen. "I don't think people should have that reaction when they're in downtown San Rafael." Cohen said the scruffy, relatively young men who hang out in front of the dining hall intimidate people. And the police, he said, aren't attacking the homeless. They're enforcing the law. A little aside here, does this sound familiar? This is the same kind of comments, the same kind of bigoted comments we hear behind the Rotkin injunction coming before the courts on Friday here in Santa Cruz against the protesters. Jaywalking is, of course, the device being used in San Rafael. It's interesting, that was this device that Santa Cruz police used back in 1990 against the post office homeless vigil. And ironically enough, one of the main vigilers there was a man named Jay Green, Jabberwocky Jay Green. So jaywalking tickets became a source of some amusement. The San Rafael St. Vincent's dining room is really, as I mentioned last time when we had an interview with the San Rafael activist Bob King, a wonderful meal. I've never seen a better meal for homeless people anywhere. In fact, it's better than a lot of restaurants. It's really, they have these two or three different kinds of desserts and two or three entrees. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And you might say, well, you know, what is this? You know, well, what this is that it's a one moment of brightness in a day for a lot of people who are really getting screwed over big time and who are on the streets for in many cases, a lot of reasons that they have no control over. And in other cases, I say, as a member of Food Not Bombs and one who believes in sharing free food, it's a good form of distribution where, you know, what most people sweat and strain and work to get, they can, if they want, they can come down to the St. Vincent's dining hall and they can have some of that without it working for a bit. You know, I mean, this isn't just open to homeless and poor people. It isn't just some welfare number. Anybody can go in there and eat, and it's a wonderful thing. Let's hear some more of this story in the San Francisco Examiner. When the city council recently got a report on crime near the dining hall, Cohen said jaywalking wasn't the problem. Instead, he said, we've gotten complaints about drug dealing, violent and antisocial behavior, including urinating and defecating in public places. But Mark Antonio, citing a recent California Supreme Court ruling against selective enforcement, said San Rafael police activity against dining hall patrons seems to single out a single group of people. Legal Aid filed a Public Records Act request in March seeking police records on everyone cited for jaywalking since 1990, and also asked for the names of people who have filed complaints against jaywalkers and other traffic safety violators to see if there are as many complaints as police say. This is a subject that's going to be coming up a little bit later in the show when we talk about the complaints against the drummers, and we talk about, complaints about City Hall protesters. The whole business of there being complaints becomes a quick rhetorical tool in the mouth of the mayor, but the question of whether it has any substantial backup in police records has yet to be determined. For instance, at the City Hall sleepout, there have been no tickets issued for urinating, defecating, no tickets issued for blocking the sidewalk, no tickets issued for harassment, no tickets issued for trespass, and all these issues are being raised as the habitual criminal violations that need immediate abatement in an injunction for which people will be subject up to 6 months in jail for a violation. And none of that has been shown in terms of police records. So the kind of investigation that's being done here in San Rafael should also be done in Santa Cruz and anywhere else that this happens. Similarly, the whole process of the poor position of the resident who is being disturbed by drumming and can't get the police to respond because the courts are too lenient or the process is too difficult. There was no investigation made of what actually happened in past cases to whether there was any truth to that. Instead, the mayor's word was taken. The sort of secondhand stories about the police was accepted, stories from the Sentinel or vague claims by the city attorney without any kind of substantiation as to is it really difficult for a person to file a complaint against a drummer? I don't think so, really. I've never thought so. But, you know, I mean, I'd like to hear the specifics behind this. And there may indeed be individual police officers saying that it's difficult to do that. And we'll be pursuing that a little bit in this interview with Tom Noddy that follows the story about San Rafael. Again, coming back to the story. So they sought a Public Records Act request to see if there are as many complaints as police say. The city responded that it doesn't make such police reports available to anyone except victims or victims' insurance companies, and that the public may view arrest records only from the previous 30 days. I'm not even going to comment on that. Bob King, a member of the San Rafael-based Homeless in Action, estimated at least 20 dining hall patrons have been cited for jaywalking in recent months as they crossed the street after their meals. Lately, he said, police and patrol cars have started waiting across the street from the dining hall and using a public address system to warn people not to jaywalk. King and Mark Antonio said officers also have told homeless people they've stopped that they should leave town. It's the same old story here, Mark Antonio said. Rather than filling in the substantial gaps in the system that's supposed to be provided for people without homes, without food, without medical care, without psychiatric care, San Rafael is saying, let's get these people off the street. We don't want to see you around here anymore. Get out of town. It's like the Old West. King, 55, remembers a time when there was more acceptance of the homeless in the community. The fantasy we always feel pushed on us is that only very successful people should live in Marin, he said. All those who aren't successful should go to the city or Oakland. It's kind of elitist in Marin. Carl Shapiro, the attorney who represented Murphy after his jaywalking citation, said police have undertaken a campaign against the patrons of the soup kitchen to make them go away. Murphy was convicted last week of jaywalking and sentenced to 10 hours of community service. Shapiro said he plans to appeal. Suleiman Ozkan, who runs an antique store next to the dining hall, has been so perturbed by problems associated with the dining hall that he presented a petition to the city council a month ago, signed by downtown merchants. The petition complained about drug dealing, vandalism to shops and cars in the area, loitering, littering, and hostile behavior. Troublemakers who hang out in front of the dining hall are deterring customers from coming to B Street, said Ozkan, who asked that police patrols continue. All we want is that people go there to eat and then leave, not hang around all day. San Rafael Police Commander Tom Boyd said police presence has been stepped up in the area, but there is no campaign to cite the homeless for jaywalking. Police sometimes write citations for jaywalking, he said, but only if a person is observed holding up traffic. We're not in the business of harassing people or violating people's rights, Boyd said. In response to complaints about problems around St. Vincent de Paul's, the police department has assigned a third officer to the foot patrol in the area. We're always in a tough position, Boyd said. Merchants want very stringent enforcement of all the laws. Advocates for the homeless feel whatever we do with respect to the homeless is harassment. To try to resolve the problems, representatives of the city and St. Vincent's have been meeting with a mediator. Both sides have agreed not to discuss the sessions. Cohen said the city has a standing offer to St. Vincent's to purchase its building so it can move. St. Vincent's has been looking for a new spot for several years but has not found a suitable location. We'd like to get out of the retail area, but the NIMBYism is pretty strong. That's not in my backyard, said Bob Kunst, executive director of St. Vincent's, referring to the NIMBY trend. Unhappy with the dining hall, or unhappiness with the dining hall, seems to heat up every 5 years, he said. After complaints in previous years, dining hall patrons were asked to adhere to a good neighbor policy and move along after they were done eating. But about 1.5 years ago, St. Vincent's began allowing homeless people to hang around outside after their meals. They are only socializing out there, and they're not doing anything wrong, Kunst said. We're really infringing on their rights to exist. That's from yesterday's San Francisco Examiner, a story called In San Rafael, It's Homeless Versus the Cops. Soup Kitchen Dilemma Boils Over, Advocates Allege Police Harassment. It would be nice to see some kind of a similar story here in Santa Cruz in the Sentinel. For instance, for years we pointed out discrimination at the St. Francis Soup Kitchen. But the tame poodle Sentinel, or I should say the Sentinel that is not interested in airing homeless rights issues, has never done a story on the pervasive and continual discrimination at St. Vincent's, in spite of the fact that it goes on daily at this, not at St. Vincent's, but at Peter Carota's St. Francis Soup Kitchen here in Santa Cruz. So I kind of refer you to this, to the San Francisco Examiner, as a paper that often covers homeless issues in greater length and sometimes in greater depth than any other papers in the area, other than, for example, homeless papers like the Street Sheet of San Francisco, the Street Shit Sheet of Santa Cruz, if you can ever find a copy. I haven't published one of those in about 5 months now, although I published a lot of flyers. And then there's some other local papers like, they're kind of monthlies. There's Slingshot in Berkeley, which covers a lot of local homeless issues. There's the Food Not Bombs menu, which you heard me reading from before. And I believe there's a local Stanford paper as well, local monthly Stanford newsletter, but I don't remember what it's called. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and now you're listening to a little bit of the San Francisco Mime Troupe, so you can catch a different voice for a few moments.
El baile de la caña.
Vaya, compañeros.